Raising women's voices, one story at a time. Welcome to the She Said Project Podcast. Welcome back, friends and She Said sisters. Today, we are having a very special episode of the She Said Project podcast. I'm so excited you're here with us. This is going to be epic. I'm Jeanette Jerzyk, your co-host, national director of the She Said Project. Hi, Carrie Rosso.
I cannot wait today to say, this is Carrie Rosso, founder, because the next two people are going to say, Casey Wakefield, founder, Jill Pierce, founder. They are all in the house today.
That's right. In our Zoom studio today, we are joined by all three of the original founders of That's What She Said in Champaign, Illinois. Back in 2013, these ladies had an idea and a vision, and that's why we're here today. So welcome, Jill and Casey. Hello.
Hello.
I'm so excited. So I have to say that I don't think the three of us have been together at the same time in many, many years. But thinking back to those original days, sometimes I feel like we get more credit than we deserve, just because we really thought it was going to be one show. And we all had our different reasons for why we wanted to do it. And then we had some that were shared reasons. Yes, we had a vision for what it is now. We really, really didn't. Don't tell anybody. But we really didn't. We really just wanted to do this one thing. Am I right? Or am I making that up, you guys?
Yeah, I don't think we knew until it actually happened that night what we were coming up with. Because we had many brainstorming sessions and many times of different ways we were going to take this or do this, or, you know, it was the total creative process of figuring it all out at Jill's house, her office.
Indeed. Yes, I agree. I don't think we had any idea what we were doing.
Nope. What was that original nugget, that original moment of inspiration that said, hey, let's put on a show?
I think we had been talking about, like, we had so much fun together and we were so different and we had these three really different skill sets. And I was in a show about motherhood. Like, I knew I wanted it to be a show because when I left that show, there had been such a sisterhood and I wanted to do something that would shine a light on women beyond just motherhood, because while it's an important part of many of our lives, it isn't the whole story. And then sitting around and hearing sort of Casey's perspective on life and Jill's perspective. And it sort of just spiraled. My husband always says we were like the little rascals because we were always just rolling around like, hey guys, let's do this. And nobody ever said no. So we just kept like, yeah, let's do it. Yeah. And Jill is the greatest instigator, pusher, encourager of all things. No matter what the crazy was we'd say, she'd be like, absolutely, we can do that. We absolutely can. Jill.
And she would text them saying, hey, by the way, let's do this at Craner. What? Oh, okay. You know, hey, we've got this sponsor. They're excited. They love our idea. Really? Oh, okay. And then we just kept moving, right?
Yes, Jill, were you really confident that we could pull this off, or were you just messing with us and had no idea if it turned out?
Without a doubt, everything seemed like a good idea. Absolutely everything. It still does. Like, it all seems like a good idea until it happens. And then that's when probably 1 out of 100 end up being a good idea. And the rest are like, oh, what were we doing?
Well, but that's what makes it, I think, because we, and when I say we, I mean you. I think Casey and I had a lot more like, but what about? And you didn't have reservations of just throwing out whatever crazy thing and willing to try it.
Yeah, see what happens. Definitely.
See, that's your comfortable place, but I don't think that is a comfortable place for me, and definitely Casey. I love thinking about the first night we were backstage getting ready to go out and Jill and I were just like hitting each other on the rear end, like butt slaps. I think I even got hit in the face at one point, but whatever, I'm over it. And we turned to start hitting on Casey, which sounds weird. We turned around and we were going to give her some butt slaps. And Casey, you looked like you were going to throw up, like your face and neck were splotched red.
Yeah.
Do you remember
probably
that?
Probably because I was going to. Yeah. But then it was time to go on stage and I had to pull it together and try to do a little dance choreography that is not my thing.
That moment is so legendary. That moment when the three of you come on and you do your little dance and you start the show and you had no idea what was about to take place both that night and, you know, years into the future. But that night you brought together this incredible group of women with stories that were funny, stories that were heart-wrenching, stories that made us think, made us feel. How clear were you in that mission when you were like looking for the women who were going to participate? What were you looking for? What were you hoping for?
I think anyone that would say yes.
True. Very true.
I remember saying to the women, I could pay you booze and chocolate. There were women that we knew we wanted to be a diverse group, but we were literally, we had no budget. We had no business plan. We were just like, who are women that will say yes, basically? Not really. That's kind of a stretch, but who were awesome women who had something to say? And that was another one of the greatest things, was reaching out to women and, you know, remembering that this had not been done before. There was no point of reference. So calling women up and being like, so, hey, I know you're really busy with your life, but could you fly here? Could you come here? Because at that point, it wasn't just local. And we're going to put you on stage and we'd like you to bare your soul. We are going to awkwardly dance in front of this packed house. Hey, how about it? And we can't pay you. Come on over. And every one of them said yes. They all said yes. Like, yeah,
that was crazy. Well, that it wasn't just the ones that were on stage, but all the crazy people who like actually bought a ticket and came. And I think that's why we were able to pull it off, because we knew we had all of our friends and family out in the audience who were supportive and kind and were curious as to what we were actually doing, because no one knew. Like everyone in town would be like, what is this? What are you doing? I don't know. It's just, this is the day we're doing it. Come and find out. We'll see. You know?
Well, and there's a woman that is my neighbor, and she pulled up in front of my house one day and waved me out and handed me a check for $500 and said, you know, sort of the same thing, like, I don't know what you guys are doing. I want to support this. And that little story, I think of her doing that often, is like women, they might have the roadmap, but they're not really sure how to get there. Like, I want to support other women, but not really sure how to do it. And this was like local people. We always said we wanted it to be your teacher, your pastor, your somebody who lives next door. We didn't want big fancy polished people, because the point was we all can take the stage at any given time. Yep. And some people want to throw up.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Well, that, and everybody has a story. Like everyone's had something that they've been through or that they've experienced. And once you hear their stories, then you understand them more. Everyone has a different perspective based off of what they've experienced. It just brings more understanding and brings people together. If that's what we're trying to do as a community and support each other, then we've got to hear what you've got going on, what's behind the scenes, and, you know, not to be nosy or, you know, or a sad story, but there's, you know, tons of amazing, great stories. And then just to hear, okay, they've been through this and how did they handle it? And look, things are better now. And so I think it was a hopeful thing too for other women.
What you created that night and therefore sparked a movement that continued on was the concept of a safe space for women to be vulnerable, to do that sharing and telling those stories. The women in your community, they showed up, and I'm hearing all these wonderful examples of the support that you guys got in that first year, because women, I think, are hungry for a place they can go and share and be authentic and be themselves. And you guys created that. And there's no surprise that it kept going and that it's been growing and it's now going into other communities, because the idea was so strong and is so needed. And in today's times, like, women got something to say. So it's an honor to be building that platform for women as we go forward. On every episode of the She Said Project podcast, we like to revisit one of the stories that was shared live on stage. So Casey Wakefield,
yes,
we have a surprise for you. We actually would love to listen to the clip of the story that you shared live on stage and then, you know, check in with you on what that experience was like. So take a listen. This is a performance from the original, the very first night, That's What She Said was live on stage, by one of the founders of That's What She Said, Casey Wakefield. Live on stage in 2013 in Champaign, Illinois, sharing her story, Out of Control.
Surrender. To me, it doesn't mean to give up or throw in the towel, but to choose to see and allow the circumstances to be what they are. Things happen in our lives that we have no control over. But we do have choices, and there are events that happen no matter what we choose. When I was 19, I was in my second year of college, and my life was moving right along just like any other college student. I was achieving what I wanted to achieve, and I had control over my life. I did what I wanted to when I wanted to. And so I was so excited because at that time I was about to go on spring break for the first time ever with my girlfriends. Just me and my two girls driving down to Florida. But at this same time in my life, my father was pursuing a dream and a passion of his. He became a master scuba diver. And he was so passionate about diving that he decided to move down to the Cayman Islands, one of the best places on the earth to do diving. And he didn't know a single person. So by the time spring break had rolled around, it had been only a couple of months since he'd been there. And he was really looking forward to having someone come see him, visit him, experience what he was experiencing. And so he wanted me to come to the Caymans to visit him, but I chose, nope, I'd rather go with my girls down to Florida instead, because who wouldn't want to hang out with the girls than good old dad? Even though he was cool and a lot of fun to hang out with, very adventurous, but I chose to go down with my girls and said, I'll come over the summer break, we'll have more time to hang out. Well, my girls and I, we were in Orlando that Friday, and a few days later, it was a Sunday. We had been to dinner and we came back and we were staying at a friend's relative's house, and he gets a phone call on the phone. And you know, back then we didn't have cell phones. That was 15 years ago. So it came on the landline. So on the phone, it was my mother. And she said, honey, something bad has happened to your dad. He is dead. There was an accident. So on that same Friday that my girls and I were in Florida was the same day that my dad was airing up an oxygen tank and it exploded on him. So for the next several years, I felt horrible and felt shame because I thought that if I would have been to the Caymans visiting him, then he would have been preparing for me to arrive there or be picking me up at the airport. And instead, he was airing an oxygen tank. Then he never would have died and I let him down. But you know, there is nothing we can do to fill the void of losing someone. It just simply isn't fair. The process of grief can be absolutely unbearable. But for the next few years, I tried really hard to fill that void. Several years later, when my high school sweetheart and I got married, at the time we were living in Arizona while he was playing in the NFL. We came back that following spring to have our wedding, and we had well around 400 people at our wedding, 400. My dad's side is Amish and Mennonite, so he comes from a large extended family. My mom's side, she has a large extended family. My husband's parents, they both have large. So we had all this family. We had all of our high school friends, college friends, and our new NFL friends at our wedding. It wasn't until a few laters that it really dawned on me. Why did we invite so many people at our wedding? I mean, we loved everyone that was there, but was it really necessary to have that many people? Well, what I realized, it was to fill the void of my father not being there, that he wasn't walking me down the aisle. I know out of this whole world, that would have been something he would have wanted to do, walk his only daughter, only child, down the aisle. But he wasn't able to do that. So all those people at the wedding were there to distract me from what I couldn't control. But eventually I have learned to surrender control. It's not about always surrendering to the bad, but surrendering to the good. All allowing myself to be thankful and praise God for my family that I have here with me, for our health and for our freedom. To be intent every day on where God wants me to be. How do I know how to do this? I know when I focus on what is important in life, showing family, friends, strangers, love, mercy, grace, kindness, and compassion. When I surrender to past regrets, past mistakes, fear of loss, judgment, and most of all, to being myself, being the person who God created me to be and not what I think I want to be. So those of you who know me here in the audience know that speaking in front of a group of people is not something I would choose to do for myself or seek out. I like to stay quiet and just kind of blend in, but I believe that that's not where God wants me to be. He wants me to be here tonight on this stage and on this journey of That's What She Said. So I am surrendering and I am out of control. Thank you and hope you all enjoy tonight.
Okay, so Casey Wakefield and out of control are not two things that you often hear together. So I don't know if it's possible, but I think I was more relieved than you might have been. Like, I think we were all holding our breath because we knew, like, the story, the content was hard. And then plus just you standing up there, like, I think we were all just collectively hearing you on.
Well, and that's why I resorted to reading. Like, thank goodness I had it typed out because I would have just been like, all right, I'm done. I forget what I was going to say and just walk off. It's been many years of working through all of that and figuring out all that it meant. And yeah, like I always thought, okay, if I do good and I do this and I do that, then I'll have control over things and things will be great and fine. But you know, things happen, life happens, And it's more about how you handle it and what you base your life off of and in the people that you surround yourself on, how you move forward. Basically, like, that's what I was trying to share that night. I don't know if people got that from it or not, but at the same time, it might be even more relevant to like what this past year has been for people. You know, it's, what do you see from it? How do you take it? You know, if you're in a good place, then maybe this year was a really good thing for you. Like, you didn't have to meet so many obligations that you were doing and trying to keep up with before. Or maybe it's made you have to like really face some things and think, okay, wait, what's going on here? Like, well, how am I prioritizing my life? It's really interesting too, is that because of that talk, and I don't know if you remember this, Rosso, but a couple years ago, you had contacted me or either texted me or messaged me through Facebook. And the family and I had actually, we were in San Diego on vacation. We had just been to the tide pools. So we were out by the ocean looking at starfish. And I literally said to Fred that day, oh my gosh, my dad would love to be doing this with the kids. And that day we got back to the hotel and you had texted me saying this guy was trying to find me and that he had seen my She Said talk. Well, because of that talk, it happened to be a guy that my dad had worked with and dived with in the Cayman Islands. And so he said he has like 3 young daughters now. And he was like, I just wanted to make sure you are like the only thing that your dad ever like talked about and shared. Like, everyone knew he had this daughter back in the States. And I just wanted you to know that he loved you and adored you. And so it was really interesting. And so we got on the phone and I talked with him. He now lives in Nova Scotia, which is where he's from. And we just talked for a little while. There was a lot of things that I didn't know that had happened during that accident. And so like he was able to clarify to me like what happened before, how things were afterwards. And it was just kind of like a closing and a healing moment of knowing what all really happened and went down there. So I have a great uncle that at that time had went down to the Caymans and closed everything up, you know, investigation and all that stuff. He had what he knew and what they told him, but still there was a lot more to it. And so it was just really healing to be able to talk to somebody else that he knew and made friends with. It was just kind of a full circle moment, really.
Wow. Okay, for once, I'm speechless.
Rosso, don't cry.
I know. It's like, it takes a lot to make me speechless, but there it is. Yeah. Well, and how about your kids? Does it feel differently to you now that your kids are older?
You know, for them, like, you know, whenever we were starting the She Said project, our girls were younger and it was like, I just want my girls to be nice and compassionate people. You know, there's so much pressure on them excelling in academics and sports and dance or whatever they're into, right? You know, and so they are, they're nice girls, they're kind, they're compassionate, they're doing things that they love to do, they have their interests. And they're just like any other kids, just navigating through this past year. And they've done great with it, though. You know, like, it's frustrating. Like, Jay is not having your usual college, freshman in college experience on campus, you know, and the highlight is going out to dinner in the evenings. And that's about it. I think he's going to stay at home this semester because all of his classes were online anyways. It's not like he was meeting in person, and he's a computer science major. So it's even more secluded on your computer and everything. So at least you can be here and be around other friends that are experiencing the same stuff. And then the girls, yeah, they're just, you know, right now is distant learning, and Carly's driving now too. So that's great. As I'm sure like some of your girls are probably driving now too, but you know, that's just a whole nother thing. And then Emma navigating junior high, but I'm kind of thinking like, this might be a good way to navigate junior high and have to like be home and, you know, just do your homework and not have to worry about all the social extras, I guess, that junior high brings. But other than that, yeah, they're doing great.
Like, our girls were all sort of Jeanette's girls ages when we did this. And now maybe we just need to revisit, because now we all three have teenage girls.
So you have 2 girls each?
Mm-hmm.
2 daughters. And yeah. I have 2 daughters. I started a little bit later, but yeah, they're 8 and 6 now.
Yeah. And you know, they go through times where they were different ages and stages where maybe they didn't really get each other, but now all of a sudden it's their little buddies. The oldest is nice to the youngest, and the youngest is learning to be nice to the oldest, because then she'll take her places. She'll take her to the mall or take her to go get Dutch Bros or whatever. They learn how to work together for the benefits of each other.
Last year was the first year that I felt like my girls were old enough to come to the show. And I don't know if everybody knows this, but when this started, we were all living within a few blocks of each other. And Casey and Jill had the nerve to leave the neighborhood. Thanks. And Casey, like, dude, you left the state. I don't know if we should take that personally or what. But we're all sort of in our own little corners of the world now. And last year when my girls were there, I kept thinking, man, Jill and Casey would love this if we could all be here with all of our girls in the audience for a full circle moment. It was pretty great.
Oh, yeah. That'd be awesome. Yeah.
We can make that happen.
We'll have to do it sometime.
Hearing my girls talk about, I loved this story and that, and which ones connected. It was really just a crazy experience to listen to the reaction from my own girls.
Yeah. That's awesome.
Jill, what memories are coming back for you thinking about that first night, if that's what she said, and hearing Casey's story again?
I'm just so grateful that you shared the second part of your story, Casey. And I'm thinking, God, I wish she had a book. I could just read the rest of it. So I got sucked up in the moment of Casey's story just now. I do remember my heart skipping a beat right before we had to dance, and then that hitting everything else off beat, and then feeling like, God, this is awkward. Wow, this is a lot harder than I thought. And then I guess I also remember Casey's one-liner that just like was perfect. It was just perfect. Once that moment happened, I was like, everything's awesome.
I still have people say, like, they so didn't see that coming. It's one thing for me or Jill to make a that's what she said joke, but when Casey dropped it, it was the greatest.
Don't you think that maybe then all of a sudden they started listening? They had to listen a little bit closer.
Yeah.
Who knows? But I think I could hear my mom and the audience gasp, like,
Hi, Mom. It was great.
Just for fun.
I wasn't sure if she was actually going to do it. You know, I thought, no way.
I couldn't move from the script, you know, go blank, got to say what I'm supposed to say. That's it. You probably could have told me to say anything in that moment.
Now you tell us.
Yeah.
Any other people from the early years that you want to thank or share a memory of?
There's always Val, you know?
Oh, yeah.
I feel like Val never gets enough credit.
Yeah, you know, one of the things I remember about Val is she had her headset on. She's trying to run the show and I'm coming at her with some, you know, random dumb question. And she's the nicest person ever. And I remember her saying, stop talking. Like she had her headset on and was like, stop talking. And I was like, oh, sorry, Val. We love you. And remember how we used to call her Val Beth? I don't even know why. Her middle name is not Beth, but we called her Val Beth. And like all of the Val Beths of the whole thing. Like, I just love that, that it was all of these women coming together.
Maybe like we should say we're sorry for the torture of Val Beth and to Jeanette and to all the people that like just had to suffer through our, wow, not knowing stage etiquette, not knowing any etiquette.
This is an apology show.
Yeah.
Yes.
If you three had stayed together, at least in the same state or the same town, I mean, you were the queens of the shenanigans. Like you brought the funny, you had so many creative ideas. You could have had your own YouTube show.
Well, I think that that was one of the things that was so great when it was received, you know, I mean, it just went gangbusters. And I think the beauty of knowing, you know, when people were like, come to our town, do this, do that. Letting it be the beauty and serve the purpose that it did in each of our lives and for what, and you know, in the other towns, they don't want to hear our stories. They want to hear their own people's stories. You know, they want to hear their teacher, their neighbor. And so I feel like often when somebody hits gold with something and then they just beat the crap out of it until it's like, ugh, we all knew. I remember crying when Casey, and as we all know, I am not a crier. And crying when Casey shut up, Jill.
No, like you just were crying. Like,
yeah. I wasn't.
We love you.
Carrie was trying to, she was trying to fake it. She was trying to hide it. Like, oh, yeah, I got something bad. I totally put it. I'm like, this is recorded. I've got proof.
All of the mascara, that's all.
Liars, you bunch of liars. But Kate, I loved, and I have remembered that, tried to remember that, like, know when it's time to go. Like the old saying, you know, a lady knows when it's time to say goodnight. But like knowing yourself and knowing, you know, that it served a purpose and knowing, and then we all sort of were like, okay. And we did our things and our lives have changed. And Casey's a big fancy painter and you know, we all have gone on to do these other things, but like whenever I see or think about the two of them, it just makes my heart pitter-pat. And my apologies to them. I feel like we should have a sign. Sorry about all those weird things I made you do. And, but a, like, a, I love you, like a sunset heart hands.
Thing. I didn't apologize to you, Rosso. I'm not sorry for anything I made you do. There's mm-hmm. still more coming.
I want to share how incredibly special this episode has been for me. I have been honored to join the She Said team. Val and I did overlap back in 2015. We co-directed that show. And, you know, it has looked absolutely different every single year. But what you guys built, that core mission of sharing people's stories, as so many wonderful quotes and isms that get stuck in my head. And Carrie's voice is always there talking. The mission is simple, exchanging stories, but the results are extraordinary. And Casey, by sharing what happened after your story, I mean, it's just a perfect example of the power of what you guys have created, the platform that is, that's what she said, for women to come together and share. And it's an honor to be a part of it. It's an honor to see you all and be with you all today, and that we now get to share these women's stories with a greater audience through the podcast and our YouTube channel and our social media as the She Said mission grows. So thank you to our fans and our friends and our She Said sisters. Thank you to the three of you, Jill, Carrie, and Casey.
I love you guys. Thank you for doing this. Thank you for everything.
You guys are amazing. This has been epic. Thank you so much for this very special time here on the She Said Project podcast.
Thank you for listening to the She Said Project podcast in partnership with Illinois Public Media. All materials contained in the podcast are the exclusive property of The She Said Project and That's What She Said LLC. For more information on our live shows, go to shesaidproject.com. This podcast was made possible with support from Carl and Health Alliance and presented by Sterling Wealth Management, empowering women to live their best lives.